what do you know? Well, what do you know? It's your boy. He film Twitter almost killed him, but he's here. He survived, not literally, figuratively, obviously, but nevertheless, my God, my goodness gracious, we are back, man. I am back. Oscar guy here. How's it going, y'all? How's your year been? I know it's been a crazy year, and it still is a crazy year. The rapture was apparently yesterday. Whatever, man. didn't happen. But yeah, man, how's it going, y'all? We're back. It's a new season. And I took a break. I took a pretty long break, you know, a longer break than I was planning to take. A much needed break for sure after last season. Absolutely. What a doozy that was. And yeah, I haven't done anything on this channel since the Oscars last year. I did my Oscars recap video, and that was it. I was like, I'm out, man. And I was planning on coming back maybe around August, but August was a crazy month for me personally, with my job and just a lot of, I just had a lot going on that month. So I had to push it back just a little bit. I did do a first round of predictions, which I kind of half-assed published on my Instagram story. By the way, if you haven't followed me on Instagram, what the hell are you doing, man? Oscar Guy here on Instagram, Oscar Guy here on Letterboxd, and my YouTube channel, of course, Oscar Guy here. But here we are. It's late September. The main film festivals, the fall film festivals, have pretty much wrapped up, except for NIFF. NIFF is still going on right now. That's the New York Film Festival. And that one's a kind of a long one, and I think that's going to go well into October, I believe. And then after that is, we're gearing up for, Golden Globes, really, and some of the critics groups and some of the early precursors like Gotham's and stuff like that. And all that. So that is on the horizon, but man, it's, I've been really putting off coming back for quite some time. And I apologize for taking that long hiatus, that long break. But I do want to, make light of my hiatus a little bit and maybe make some announcements regarding the channel and regarding the brand. I will say that I am planning on scaling back a little bit in regards to my output for this channel. I'm not going to be making as many videos. I'm actually going to be driving this podcast a little bit more. I want to make more podcast episodes. I want to try to do one every week, if not maybe every other week. Maybe I should stick with every week. I don't know. I kind of want to prioritize the podcast from here on out because it's easy to produce. I can basically record one, put an intro and outro, upload it, and have it live the same night as I record one, which is great. So I kind of want to prioritize the podcast from here on out. I making videos is kind of a love hate for me. When I make a really good one, I feel very satisfied. And some types of videos I like more than others. But even the ones that I like, I mean, getting into the editing holes is not something I enjoy after this past year. So I've kind of decided to scale back my YouTube content a little bit. I'm not going to be doing any predictions videos anymore, because first of all, there's so much work. I have to record it first and foremost, which involves talking into a microphone for an hour plus. Then I have to edit it, which is the beast. And you know, sometimes I have fun with editing, but every now and again, when I just want to get a video out there, I don't really take any creative liberties, because I just don't have the time, don't have the patience. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. You know, outputting productions videos like that, and they don't really get a lot of views anyway. And I talk a lot anyway during my reaction videos and my live streams, you know, about my predictions. And I have my website that I have my predictions on too, which you can always check, oscarguyhere.com/predictions. And you know, I'm going to phase the predictions videos out. I think from now on, my videos are just going to be my reaction videos, nominations, reactions videos, and my live streams. That's pretty much all I'm going to do as far as video content. Aside from that, I'm just going to be doing this podcast. Not going to be doing any more quickie reviews, I don't think. Maybe I'll do like a one-off, like short here and there, like maybe a quick first impressions video or something like that. Maybe. I kind of still want to do my Operation Watchlist shorts. Haven't done one of those in a while. I've been kind of kicking around the idea of going back to that. But I just want to say that I'm going to be scaling back a little bit. I could take it to the next level, but honestly, for me to kind of take the channel and the brand to the next level is going to require me to basically go all in and make some really tough life choices and sacrifices that I'm just not ready to make. I got a lot of other things in my life that I want to focus on, like my job and my music career. I'm getting back into playing music a little bit more this year, so I kind of want to prioritize that a little bit more, because that's definitely been taking a backseat. And just general just quality of life, you know, being a little bit more disconnected from social media. I will say that this past season was incredibly, it took a lot out of me, honestly. It was a very toxic and chaotic award season. Probably one of the most toxic seasons I've ever followed in a very, very long time. With the Emilia Perez of it all, and all of the discourses and the controversies, and just the overall just overwhelmingly negative energy in the community. And by community, I mean film Twitter. I don't necessarily mean like you guys, definitely not, or any other YouTube channel that I follow, but really just like the general community on film Twitter is just so toxic from beginning to end last year. Look, even after Anora won Best Picture and the Emilia Perez beast was slain miraculously, like people were still going to Twitter and being like, oh, this is our Best Picture winner, really, Anora? Like, bro, can nobody on the internet can be grateful for what we have. And that is just insane, man. It's insane. I couldn't, man, it really got to me. And I you know, this past year, I was kind of putting on a happy face and this kind of facade. And I was like, oh, it's all good. It's chaotic. It's what makes it fun. But like, which is partially true still, but it was too much for me. So I'm gonna scale back on film Twitter a little bit. I'm just gonna try not to get wrapped up into it, because it's a blessing and a curse. I wouldn't call it a blessing, but there it's two sides of the same sword, if you will. You know, a lot of the word of mouth and a lot of the news regarding rumblings in the award season race and film in general comes from Twitter. Like, I would say a big majority of it. There are other sources out there that I kind of want to, you know, look into other than just hearing what people have to say on Twitter, which, gee, I mean, God forbid. So I kind of want to, you know, reframe my mind in regards to that too. And, Yeah, last year it was crazy. I mean, by it really burnt me out. Like after the Oscars, when I was doing my last video, my Oscars recap video, I admit that I half-assed that video because I just wanted to be done. I wanted to just put the video out there and just not look back. And I didn't watch a movie after I made that video for, I want to say, at least a month, month and a half. Like, I was over it. Like, I just did not want any part of it anymore. I was like, I was done. I even thought about quitting, seriously. But as the season kind of started gaining traction in August, and after the Cannes Film Festival in Venice, and there's some really great movies that coming out this year, which I'm very excited for. So, I think the flame has been relit, not like super gung ho, but I think something's there again for me. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm not gonna quit. I'm just gonna scale it back a little bit and kind of put out stuff on my own pace and kind of do things on my own terms and not, worry about other people's expectations of what I should be delivering. Because, man, a lot of the content creators I follow, man, they're a year-round operation. They are doing, I mean, they were doing early Oscar predictions back in March, April, always going to see movies, always reviewing them, always talking about it. And, for me, I kind of need a break. It was good to have that kind of 4 or 5 month break in between seasons. So, but we're here, we're back, and I appreciate you all sticking around with me and still subscribing and still following me and my nonsense. So I really appreciate it. And I'm gonna stick it out. And this season is looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good. It's looking better than last year. And I do say that last year, there's a lot of people that say, oh, last 2024 was a bad year for movies. I don't agree. It was a weaker year. I'll admit that. It was definitely weaker than 2023 and even 2022. But it was good. I mean, we had Anora, we had The Brutalist, we had The Substance. We had others. Evil Does Not Exist. What came out last year? What were last year's Oscars? Yeah, we had we oh no, that was this past year. Okay. I mean, yeah, we had Conclave was good. Dune Part 2 was good. Nickel Boys, for God's sakes. Sing Sing. I'm Still Here. I mean, it was a good year. It wasn't amazing, but it was a good year. It was a good year. But this year is looking pretty great. This year is looking pretty great. And the Philadelphia Film Festival is coming up. And if you guys don't know, I'm based in Philadelphia. And I have been going to the film festival every year since 2023. I don't get a press pass or anything. I'm not at that level yet. So I'm basically just buying tickets of movies that I want to see. For now. So that's coming up. They haven't released the slate for that yet. The schedule for that, I think, is going to be coming out pretty soon, within the next week or two. But I'm going to be attending that. Yeah, it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty good. And we will eventually get to this, but One Battle After Another is basically out. It comes out tomorrow officially. That is currently the Best Picture front runner. And One Battle After Another, if you guys don't know, is the new Paul Thomas Anderson film, one of my favorite filmmakers, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Benicio del Toro, Sean Penn, Regina Hall, Tiana Taylor, Chase Infinity. It's looking, I mean, there's been early word about that movie regarding test screenings that didn't sound too great. But it was just completely false. I kind of had this idea that it was just going to be a PTA film that's kind of mid-level, kind of like lesser PTA. But it's just not that at all. It is actually some people are calling it his best movie, his most timely movie, his magnum opus, his most accessible movie, his most bombastic. It is an event film. It is, like I said, very timely to the current political climate. It's perfect for our age right now, it seems. And I cannot wait to see it. I am going to be seeing it tomorrow night. I think in IMAX. I don't know if it's in... It's at a theater near me, which typically has an IMAX, IMAX showings. And I think it's in the same... I'm pretty sure I'm seeing it in IMAX. If not, I'm going to see it, regardless. But I am going to see that tomorrow, and I am so stoked. I'm so absolutely stoked. We got one battle after another. We have Hamnet, the new film from Chloe Zhao that won the TIFF People's Choice Award recently, which is pretty much a surefire thing that you will get a Best Picture nomination. And in fact, it's probably one of the front runners. So looking forward to seeing that. Probably going to, if that's going to be showing at Philly Film Festival, I'm going to try to go see that. Sinners is up there. I did see Sinners. I really liked it. That was a great movie. That is in the Best Picture conversation. It's going to, hopefully it's going to be nominated elsewhere as well. Marty Supreme, the new Josh Safdie film. No one has really seen that. That's going to be coming out on Christmas. Excited for that. And then the other Safdie brother, Benny Safdie, is coming out with The Smashing Machine starring Dwayne Johnson. I've heard pretty good things about it. Not great, but pretty good things about it. I don't know if Rental Family is going to be a thing anymore. That was an early like Oscar buzz movie that kind of, it seems like it's kind of coming and going, but we'll see. Rental Family is a kind of a lighthearted comedy starring our boy Brendan Fraser, who gives a great performance from what I hear in the film. But it might come and go. It's Searchlight's movie this year. So maybe they'll give it a campaign, but I'm not sure where that's going to go. So that's kind of on the cusp. Wicked for Good is coming out this year, the sequel to last year's Wicked, obviously. We haven't really seen much of that yet. Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, the Springsteen biopic starring Jeremy Allen White and Jeremy Strong and Stephen Graham, recent Emmy winner. I've heard pretty good things about that too, and Jeremy Allen White, definitely in contention for Best Actor. We have the new Avatar, Fire and Ash. New Avatar coming out. Not sure if that's going to crack into Best Picture or not, or if it's just going to get text or what, how it's going to fare in comparison to The Way of Water. But I'll be seeing it. I'll be going to see it. Jay Kelly, the new Noah Baumbach, has been getting like good to kind of lukewarm reviews. That was kind of an early Oscar buzz pick, but now it's kind of on the muted side. Maybe Clooney can get in for actor and Adam Sandler in for best supporting actor. Beyond that, maybe a screenplay, but I kind of doubt Jay Kelly's chances at this point. We'll see. Begonia, the new Yorgos Lanthimos film starring Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons, looks great, looks wacky. Not sure if it's going to be a huge Oscars player. That's going to be on the cusp, but that one looks great. Guillermo del Toro has a Frankenstein film coming out, which placed at TIFF. It got the runner-up for the TIFF People's Choice Award, which was very surprising to me because I've heard some people are not too terribly into it. And I've heard others that say it's great. It's a little bit slow. The first half is a little bit slow, but then the second half really ramps up. Jacob Elordi as Frankenstein's monster apparently gives an incredible, like Nosferatu-esque performance. I'm eager to see what comes with Frankenstein. That's probably going to be more of a tech player than anything, but that TIFF placement has me believe that it's right on the cusp for Best Picture. House of Dynamite, Catherine Bigelow's new film. I've heard good things about Ballad of a Small Player, the new Edward Berger, I hear is fine. Same thing with After the Hunt, the new Luca Guadagnino film. Both of those films are like kind of getting lukewarm reception, kind of muted reception. So I don't know. I'm not sure about those two. Anemone. My boy DDL, Daniel Day-Lewis, is back, ladies and gentlemen. And apparently he's like, I didn't mean to retire again. I had no intention to do so. Sure, buddy. He's back. He's back. Regardless of that, he is back. He is going to be in this new film directed by his son, also starring Sean Bean. I've seen the trailer. It looks very good. And you know DDL is going to give it his all. So I have him in Best Actor for right now. The Testament of Anne Lee, the Mona Fastfold film, who co-wrote The Brutalist with Brady Corbet last year. She has a new film, musical film called The Testament of Anne Lee. I've heard pretty good things about it. I'm not sure if it's going to be an Oscar player or not, but I'm eager to go see that as well. Bradley Cooper, our boy, got a new film coming out called Is This Thing On? We don't know too much about it, but it stars Will Arnett and Laura Dern. Looks to be like a kind of a comedy drama. Looks pretty good. I've seen the trailer. We'll see what comes of that. But yeah, is that everything? Oh yeah, and God, I haven't even gotten to the international picks. There's a lot of great international movies coming out. For one, we got It Was Just an Accident, directed by Jafar Panahi. Won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. Cannes Film Festival nowadays. Very, very... If you win awards and are even in competition at the Cannes Film Festival, but especially if you win awards, major awards, you're going to have Oscar buzz these days. Within this decade, in this time, yeah. If you win the Palme d'Or or the Grand Prix or the Jury Prize or whatever, you're going to be talked about throughout the season. So It Was Just an Accident was submitted by France, I think, for Best International Feature. That was acquired by Neon. Another film that was acquired by Neon is Sentimental Value, which won the Grand Prix at the Cannes Film Festival, which is the runner-up prize. Got a 19-minute standing ovation. I hear it's amazing. Directed by Joachim Trier, who did The Worst Person in the World, which I did rewatch recently. Very good movie. So that was also acquired by Neon. So that is in contention for Oscar consideration. And there is a third international film acquired by Neon, directed by one Park Chan-wook, No Other Choice, which I think has the best buzz out of all three of those films. I've heard incredible things about No Other Choice. He directed Decision to Leave, which I also did rewatch recently. A great movie, but a little hard to follow and a little much for my tastes. But it was still really good. I really like his directorial style. Very, very inventive filmmaker. But No Other Choice seems very timely because it's kind of about the cooked job market and late stage capitalism and its effects on the job market. And I hear it's very darkly humorous, with a big gut punch and kind of call to action at the end of the film. Really, really, really excited to see that. I can't wait to see that one. So those three films. Will Neon submit all three of those, or campaign all three of those, rather, for international feature? It could happen, but they could play... Are they going to put all their eggs in the No Other Choice basket, the Sentimental Value basket? Like, how are they going to divide up this stuff? Because that's a lot of acquisition, baby. And if we get three Neon films in international feature this year, that's going to be crazy. So... We'll see. We'll see. Those are pretty much it. As far as like films in contention for Oscars this year, That's the cliff notes, ladies and gentlemen. That's the cliff notes. You know what I'm saying? I will be updating my predictions soon. I did my initial predictions before all of the fall festivals happened. Now that they have happened, we know some more things. I'm going to be updating those, and I think on the next podcast episode, I'm going to be going through my updated predictions for October of 2025. So stay tuned for that. And that is the current state of the race, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. And I'm seeing one battle after another tomorrow, and I couldn't be more excited. But on the subject of Paul Thomas Anderson, I figured we'd do a little something-something for the latter half of this episode. Like I said, PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson is one of my favorite filmmakers. And I've seen all of his movies. I think I've seen all of his movies more than once, except for Hard Eight and Inherent Vice, which I've only seen both of those once. But his filmography is absolutely incredible. They are some of the most rewatchable films. They sit with you. They have layers and layers of meaning. They're entertaining. They're funny, but they're also very dramatic and profound at the same time. He has this very unique style in his direction, where it's like he's kind of has this layer of like he's just having fun and he's just kind of throwing shit at the wall, and whatever he throws on the wall fucking works like to the nth degree. Like, he just has this magic and this whimsy to his filmmaking that is just great. And you can really rank, aside from maybe his first film, Hard Eight, which, you know, by and large is probably his least impressive film. It's hard to say it's his worst film because it's not a bad movie. It's fine. It's okay. It's not great, but it's definitely at the bottom of everyone's list, essentially. And then another film that's near the bottom of the list for most people is Inherent Vice, which is a very inaccessible kind of Thomas Pynchon adaptation film, which I've seen and I do like, but it is very frustrating and it's very hard to follow. But I think that's the point of the film. I kind of want to revisit that film in mind because, you know, it kind of goes against the grain of how you would want to watch a movie. If you want to watch a movie, you kind of want to know what's going on, right? Inherent Vice kind of goes against that. So in that regard, it is a very inaccessible film, but it's beautifully made, beautifully adapted, beautifully shot, beautifully acted. But that's near the bottom of a lot of people's lists. But other than that, you can take his other seven films and they can be in any order. Any of them could be your number one or your number two or three. Like, they're that good. They're all like at that level. So what I would like to do, I'm going to go through my PTA ranked. It kind of fluctuates every now and again, you know. It depends on what I'm feeling, how I'm feeling, what stage of my life I'm currently at, how many times I've rewatched it, if I've unwrapped additional layers or whatnot with each of these films. But I think I have a pretty solid ranking, I think, for my nine films. And obviously I'm not going to be ranking one battle after another because I haven't seen it yet. But in honor of PTA and in honor of one battle, I am going to be ranking my PTA films. My personal favorite. This is not an objective list. This is a subjective list. This is my personal PTA ranking. At number nine, I have Hard Eight. Like I said, it's his first film. I'm not sure if like the studio interfered a lot with the actual film and how it was edited down and cut. But I do know that the original title of this film was Sydney, which is the main character in the film, played by Philip Baker Hall. But I think he kind of had to make a deal with whoever was distributing the movie. And I think the deal was if you get to name it Hard Eight, you can have final cut or final-ish cut of the film. And I think that's what happened. I gave Hard Eight, I think, like a 3 out of 5, 3.0, 3.0, which might be a little bit harsh. I don't know. It might be a little bit better than that. But like I said, I watched it once, and it was fine. It was fine. You know, Philip Baker Hall does great. John C. Reilly does, you know, he does a fine job. Gwyneth Paltrow is great. Samuel Jackson's in it. But it's just kind of like a meh film. There's some great moments. In particular, the hotel room scene. When Sydney shows up to the hotel and tries to save the night or whatever. I forget exactly what happens, but I remember that being a pretty good scene. And then Sammy J has some standout moments as well, but it all kind of amounts to, like, not much. You know, there's a one scene performance from Philip Seymour Hoffman that's pretty entertaining, but it's kind of like there for no reason, in my opinion. But yeah, it's fine. It's ranked number 9. Number 8 is Inherent Vice, which we've already talked about. Like I said, I want to rewatch it. And I'm not going to, like, go out of my way to try to understand it, because from what people tell me, like, the point of the film is that none of what happens in the film matters. It's all just, I don't want to say, what's the word? Not facade, banal, the banality, not banal. What the hell's the word, brother? I don't know. But yeah, it's like, it's beautifully shot and it's really well crafted and it's a great, I mean, it's like the definitive, I think, Thomas Pynchon adaptation, you know? Very cerebral, very meandery and all over the place. Ton of characters, a lot of in and, like, you know, side plots and in and outs. And, like, it's kind of impossible to keep track of. But like I said, that's the point of the film, I think, which I respect. I do respect it, but I don't completely get it. So I kind of want to circle back on that at some point and give it another shot. But it is currently my number 8 in the ranking. My number 7 in the ranking. Now, this is where it gets tricky. Like I said, like, from number 7 to number 1, this could be any order of... This could literally be any order you want. And this is usually very personal to the person. Personal to the person. Making this list, and this one kind of it can be hurtful. It can hurt putting a great film as low as number 7, and that great film for me at number 7 is Boogie Nights. I'm sorry, I apologize to all of the people that have Boogie Nights in the top 3, if not number 2 or 1. I really, really like Boogie Nights. I think it's a great movie, but in his filmography, I think it's one of his weaker ones, just because he didn't really find his signature style just yet. He was formulating it for sure by the time this film came out, but it felt like he was kind of doing like this Tarantino thing where he was borrowing a lot of things instead of like, you know, making the film on his own terms and his own standards and his own style. He was still formulating that. And there's nothing really you can do about that because the guy was 26 when he made this film, which is incredible. It's insane what he achieves at that young age, directing a film like that. Incredibly ambitious, incredibly big in scope, just grand and just wild and insane editing choices and keeping track of all these characters. It's very Altman-esque. So it's a great movie. It's a great movie, but there's some things that kind of hold it back for me. It's a little overlong. It's a little messy. It's there's not, you know, especially in the second half, there's like not a lot of cohesion, and there's this kind of level of like naivete even. But it's still great. It's still great. Some amazing sequences. You know, the one that comes to mind, obviously, is the one near the end where they go to that drug deal. That one performance, one scene performance from Alfred Molina as the drug dealer. That's probably the most anxiety-inducing scene in the film, and probably the best scene in the film, for sure. And then it gets really dark. It gets really, really dark, and then it kind of turns around, and there's this great Beach Boys needle drop, and then it's like, okay, well, will all these characters find their way after everything falls apart? But yeah, it's good. I really like it. I've seen it twice, I think. Maybe three times. I don't remember. But it's great. Mark Wahlberg, you know, Burt Reynolds, William H. Macy, I forget who plays Roller Girl. Julianne Moore. That was one of her breakout performances. John C. Reilly again is in this one. Great needle drops, great licensed soundtrack, great tracking shots. Again, the guy was 26 years old when he made this. Like, what do you want from me? It's number 7. I'm sorry, but I gave it, I think, like a 4 or a 4.1 out of 5, which is still a really great score for me, man. So that's Boogie Nights, number 7. Number 6, I have Licorice Pizza. I really like Licorice Pizza. I really like it. That is his latest film. Before One Battle After Another, it came out in 2021. Oh, God, I've seen it at least 4 times, I think. Maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. It's great. And there's some detractors out there who are not quite into it. Because it's kind of, in a way, it's a little plotless. You know, there's not really much going on in terms of a narrative thread and like character development per se. And a lot of people need that. They need a plot. They need a narrative thread for it to be engaged and for this whole experience to be worth it for them. And I understand that, but for me, this is PTA's hangout movie. And a hangout movie is kind of like, you know, what I just described, just like a plotless kind of aimless kind of exploration of a certain thing. In this case, these two young characters who fall in and out of love with each other, back and forth for over the course of the film. And then it's over. And that's it. And that is the whole point of it. It's just following these characters through all of their escapades and all of their shenanigans, seeing who they interact with, seeing these supporting characters kind of, you know, revolve around them, the situations they get themselves in. It's a situational film and a very observational one at that. It's just you observe the scene and the setting and the time and place. It puts you there with them. You're following them around for a while, and then it's all over. And I love it. I think it's great. It's not perfect. It's definitely not perfect. There's some sequences in the film that do drag. And then there's some other sequences that are so full of energy and so vibrant and so engaging. But yeah, there, you know, it, the one that comes to mind is the sequence with Sean Penn and, Tom Waits. That whole sequence, there's some good moments in that sequence, especially at the restaurant. But that whole sequence kind of overstays its welcome, in my opinion, and kind of slows things down. But then at the end of that sequence, we have that amazing Paul McCartney needle drop, and then things really liven up again. And then that leads into, I think, the best sequence in the film, which is the Bradley Cooper, John Peters sequence with the gas embargo. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's not perfect, but it's a great. It's a great one. And that is my number six. Shout out to Alana Haim. Shout out to Cooper Hoffman. Shout out to Harriet Sansom Harris, who gives an amazing one scene performance in that film. That's it. That's Licorice Pizza, number six. Number five. The Big Boy, Magnolia, number five. So after PTA did Boogie Nights, he kind of got like a blank check from the studio, and they were just like, do whatever you want. And then he was like, okay, well, I'm going to write a 3-hour melodrama. And I think how PTA tells it is that his dad passed away. His dad died of cancer, and he wrote a movie, and Magnolia was that movie. And it is about that, about life and how everything is connected and how things that don't make sense still happen. And the metaphor there is, from how PTA tells it, PTA, you know, when the doctor called him on the phone and told him that your dad is terminal, he's going to die of cancer, it's as if they were telling him that frogs are falling from the sky. And I'll just leave it at that. If you've seen it, you know what I mean. It's kind of like that. That is what the film is about. And there's a lot of different characters in the film. Every character in the film is supporting. There's not really a lead. You could argue it's Tom Cruise. You could argue it's the kid. You could argue it's Philip Baker Hall. You could argue that it's the woman, the coke addicted woman who goes out with John C. Reilly's character. I forget her name. You could say it's her. You could say it's Julianne Moore's character, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. I mean, there really isn't a lead. In my opinion, they're all supporting characters. But it's incredibly ambitious. It's brilliant at times. In the grand scheme of things, it's a really, really great movie. But man, is it long. and you know, I don't really mind long films. You've heard me say that before, I think, in my past videos or whatever, but it's 3 hours long. I think it could it get cut down to maybe 2.5, maybe 2:40. It does overstay its welcome a little bit. And there's a lot of jumps to certain, you know, characters and scenes, and you know, the score is very swelling and very melancholic. It's a melodrama, and it's kind of overbearing in that way. But I think that was intentional. I think PTA wanted to intentionally create something that was so full of emotion, because it's about death. It's about a death of a family member and coming to terms with that and the grief process. There's a lot of emotion involved, obviously, with that. So it's an incredibly emotional film for a reason. And that's how I defend it. But I can't put aside some of its, you know, shortcomings and call it a masterpiece. It's almost a masterpiece, but it's very flawed. But I love it still. Tom Cruise gives his best performance in his career. Full stop. Incredible performance. Should have won the Oscar. Won the Golden Globe. I'll give him that. But amazing performance. Tom Cruise can act, ladies and gentlemen. Look no further than Magnolia. Every performance in this film is good. John C. Reilly crushes in this film. And his girl, who's the girl? What's her name? I'm looking it up right now. Who plays the girl? The coke, the drug addicted girl. Who John C. Reilly. Melora Walters? Is that her name? Melora Walters? Laura Walters as Claudia Wilson Gator. Yeah, no. Is that her? Claudia Wilson Gator. Rose Gator. Okay, Rose Gator is the older woman, Melinda Dillon. Yeah, Melora Walters. Yeah, she's great. Philip Seymour Hoffman obviously is great. Julianne Moore. Oh, Jason Robert Robards as Earl Partridge, the dying father, gives a great final performance. That was his final performance before he passed away. He's great. William H. Macy, great. Philip Baker Hall, great. The kid, God forbid, the kid. Who's the kid? What's his name? Emmanuel Johnson, I think. Dixon? Is Dixon? Is that his name? Dixon? Who's Dixon? Dixon's child prodigy. Oh, Stanley Spector is hounded by his father. Okay, Stanley Spector. Ah, Jeremy Blackman. Yeah. Yeah. I think he was only in that movie and maybe in a couple other things, and then that was it. He quit acting. Yeah, he crushed it. He absolutely crushed it, brother. And then we got a lot of other other supporting players as well. Yeah, great movie. Great movie. It's wild. It's a wild movie. It's very long. It's a lot. It's a lot. But I recommend it. I recommend it. So that is my number, what are we on? Five? Five? Yeah. Okay. All right, here we go. Top four. Number four, I'm going with Phantom Thread. Phantom Thread from 2017, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. The incomparable Vicky Creeps, who she gives an amazing performance in this film and matches Daniel Day-Lewis in this film. And really, if it wasn't for her performance, this movie wouldn't be as good as it is. She just absolutely crushes it, and she should have been nominated for an Oscar for that. But who was nominated for an Oscar, shockingly, was Leslie Manville, who's also great in the film. And she plays Daniel Day-Lewis's character's sister. Harriet Sansom Harris is also in it. We got yeah, but that's yeah, I'm looking at the letterbox right now. Reynolds Woodcock is the name of Daniel Day-Lewis's character. That is all. And this is a drama. This is a romantic drama. You could call it a comedy. I think it's a comedy. But if you name your character Reynolds Woodcock and laugh your ass off and put it in a drama film, you know you're a brilliant director. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I love this movie. It's really good. It kind of had to grow on me a little bit, because when I saw it for the first time back in 2017, I was, I don't know. I really liked it, but the ending kind of threw me off, and I didn't really understand the Reynolds and Alma, you know, their relationship dynamic, their toxic relationship, if you will. No pun intended. I didn't really understand it, and I was like, huh, okay, that's how you're ending it? Interesting. That's where it goes? Okay. Don't know if I agree, but I'll sit with it. And I did. I sat with it for, I think, at least 3 years before I watched it again. And when I watched it again, I had more experience, and I sat with it a little bit more, processed it, and heard other people's thoughts on it, and I circled back on it, and I was like, I get it. Wow. Amazing. It really throws you for a loop. But it's, man, it's so good. It's so good. If you haven't seen it, I know it's about a dressmaker and his muse. It sounds boring, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson. He can take anything and make it incredible, really. I mean, he just had, like I said, has this magical touch. It's really good. It's beautifully shot. The score by Johnny Greenwood is incredible. All the performances are great. It's a lot of fun. Some really great scenes, some really great quips. Just watching these two kind of form this very unique relationship and this bond and this kind of power struggle between this really, I mean, I'm going to say it, narcissistic dude. He's really in his own world and kind of has, I don't know. He has this quality of him that he just like, the world kind of revolves around him. And he knows that, and he knows he's a good dressmaker, and he uses these women as his muses, and then they expire, then he moves on to the next one. But Alma, this new girl, doesn't want to have anything to do with that shit. She's in love with him. She wants to have a relationship with him, and he, at some level, wants the same thing, but deep down, he has this need to make art, at any cost and provide, you know, to pursue greatness, really. And it's a very, very interesting film. It's really, really good. And it's one that kind of stuck with me, and it grows on you after every watch, as a lot of PTA movies do. It's fantastic. So that is my number four, Phantom Thread. And that was Daniel Day-Lewis's final performance before his return this year in An Enemy. So, fun fact there. Number three. Punch Drunk Love is my number three. The art house Adam Sandler film. You heard me right. PTA made an Adam Sandler film. And it's not your typical Adam Sandler film. This ain't no Billy Madison. This ain't no Waterboy. This ain't no Happy Gilmore. This ain't no Big Daddy. This ain't no Happy Gilmore 2, saw that. This ain't no Hubie Halloween. This ain't no Spanglish even. Funny People? This ain't no Little Nicky. This is a PTA film. This is not an Adam Sandler film. This is a PTA film that happens to star Adam Sandler in the lead role. So know that going into it, because if you're an Adam Sandler head and you watch Punch Drunk Love expecting something, you're going to be very bewildered at what you see, because it's a very quirky and very strange film, but it is so good, so immaculately made. It's inventive. It's schizophrenic sometimes with its presentation. There's some abstractness to it. It's avant-garde, even. There's this underlying, like, anxiety-ridden kind of vibe to it that kind of reflects the mental state of Adam Sandler's character, who is incredibly socially awkward. He has an anger problem. He has anxiety. He has overbearing sisters, 7 overbearing sisters, that are all pieces of shit. And he's fallen in love with somebody, and he doesn't know how to process it, but she is so accepting of him, and they kind of have, it's a love story. It's a love story. And I'll leave it at that. It's a very, very quirky, unconventional love story between two people who are just kind of destined for each other, and two people that seem kind of out of place in the world, but they fit each other so perfectly. But there's a journey to be had, and you know, until they get to that point. And it is it's so weird, man. It's so weird, but it works so well. And it's breezy. It's like an hour, not even an hour and a half. He made this movie after Magnolia. He was like, you know what? I'm going to do a 90-minute Adam Sandler movie after Magnolia. And he succeeded. By the way, still Adam Sandler's best performance. That's even including Uncut Gems. That's even including the Meyerowitz stories. We'll see what he does in J. Kelly. But for my money, his best performance is in Punch Drunk Love. He just nails it. He completely nails this character. And he's a great fucking actor. Adam Sandler, when he wants to act, he crushes it, dude. So, Philip Seymour Hoffman is also in it. Great supporting performance. That's it. Yeah. Great. Emily Watson, great. As God, what's her name? Aunt Elena. Even the sisters are really good. Piece of shit they are. They're great. They're great. Luis Guzman is in it in a weird supporting role. Yeah, dude. It's great, man. And I think I've seen that one at least 3 or 4 times too. So Punch Drunk Love is my number 3. It's up there. My number 2 and my number 1 are essentially tied, and they I mean, guys, there's only 2 movies left. You know what these 2 movies are if you're into PTA's filmography. These 2 go back and forth for me. But for right now, number 2 is The Master. And The Master is a film that really kind of needs to grow on you. When you see it the first time, you're kind of expected to not be as into it as you want to be, because it is a very cerebral film, and it doesn't really hit you until long after the credits roll. And you kind of need to process what the point of the film was afterwards, you know, how it ends. And it's more of like a big picture kind of slow. It's definitely a slow burn. You definitely have to be patient with it. Although there is a very intense, you know, kind of climactic scene that's kind of maybe not even, I think about a half an hour, maybe 40 minutes into the film. And the film is like a little over 2 hours, like 2 hours and 17 minutes, I think, how long it is. So it kind of, it pulls you in like that, you know, with the, they call it, it's called the processing scene. If you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman sitting at a table looking at each other, and they're doing this kind of Scientology-esque auditing session, and it is some of the best acting you will ever see in your life. It is just unbelievable. It is so good. And similarly, the ending scene of the two of them is, I think, in my opinion, even more effective. These two give some of their career best performances. I think it's still Joaquin Phoenix's best performance. That's even including his Oscar-winning performance in Joker. That's just me. I think his performance in The Master deserved every accolade. And same with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Amy Adams is also amazing in this film. She's not as showy. She's not as flashy. She doesn't have as much screen time, but her presence is absolutely felt through her very limited screen time. And some may even say that she is actually the master, not Philip Seymour Hoffman, which I agree. This movie's crazy. You know, Joaquin Phoenix plays this really alcohol-ridden, traumatized Navy war veteran from World War II. And he is kind of a loose cannon. And he doesn't really have a drive. He's kind of aimless. He's very unpredictable. He's very erratic. All things that he denies. he can't really find his way in life post-war. And then he kind of stumbles upon Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is this L. Ron Hubbard-esque figure who started this religion. And he kind of becomes his protege is the right word, but he follows them along. He travels with this religious group, and he in some ways becomes indoctrinated by them. But he has a clear connection to Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. they both recognize that, especially Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. Lancaster Dodd is his name. They're basically destined for each other. But they're two so that they're so different from each other in a way that they it's impossible for them to be together. Because of just physical limitations and just worldly limitations and, not limited to eternity, if you will. And, the religion kind of plays with like past lives and eternity and there's those themes that go along with it. And it's wild. The movie is wild. You kind of need to stick with it. You kind of need to get on its wavelength a little bit. But once you're there and once it clicks, once you watch it maybe one or two more times, then you really recognize it as it truly is a masterpiece. And in fact, it is PTA's film that he is the most proud of. As of, I think, 2018, I think, is when he said that. He was asked in a Reddit questionnaire or an AMA or something. And he said The Master is the film that he is the most proud of. And I definitely respect that. And it is a masterpiece, no pun intended. See it, watch it with an open mind. If anything, it's worth seeing just for the performances alone. Incredible. Incredible performances. I actually did rewatch it recently. In fact, this is the PTA film I've seen the most. I think I've seen it at least six or seven times, I think. I saw it in theaters for the first time recently. Not only that, I saw it on 70mm print. And it was amazing. Seeing that with an audience on film was incredible. I lived in that film for 2 hours and 17 minutes. It was amazing. So that's The Master. And y'all know what number one is. It's There Will Be Blood. His magnum opus. For my money, it is perfect in every way, shape, and form. It is a defining film in American cinema, modern American cinema. Contains one of the greatest performances in any film in history by one Daniel Day-Lewis. As Daniel Plainview, the oil man, ladies and gentlemen. From jump, from the very first scene with that crazy Johnny Greenwood score swell fading into the California mines and the caves that he chips away at relentlessly, getting gold and finding oil, striking oil, and becoming this oil mogul who was just stops at nothing for wealth and greatness. And he's basically the personification of capitalism, essentially, and how greed and his drive for just ownership and ownership of possessions, ownership of people. Right in the beginning of the movie, he basically steals a surrogate son and calls him his own. Say no more. The guy is a freak. It's just this crazy character study of this very dark dude, very dark man who will stop at nothing for greatness. Then we have, Eli Sunday, played exquisitely by one Paul Dano, who is kind of this very flawed kind of religious figure. He's this preacher who, this kind of like evangelical preacher who kind of, like the shakes and the spasms type of preacher. And he kind of has a twisted view on the world and a twisted view on what he believes is faith. And Daniel Plainview kind of exploits that to no end throughout this film, and especially at the very end. And the ending of this film is just a stunner. Incredible. probably one of the best, if not the best ending in any PTA film. It's just this show. It's just this powerhouse of just emotion and humor, very dark humor and horror all at once. All these emotions, all these themes culminating together in this cacophony of just insane. I don't know, man. It's like PTA. Well, how does he do it, man? It's so good. It's so good. It's crazy, man. I don't really want to talk about it too much because if you haven't seen it, man, you gotta just do it. It's just, it's incredible. The oil rig sequence in the middle of the film, forget about it, dude. And the Johnny Greenwood score, the Penderecki ass shit, forget about it, dude. Absolutely forget it. And the 2.5 hours fly by. They really fly by. And even if they don't, even if you sit with the film, and it's one of those films where it kind of starts off slow and then it kind of builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And then you're knocked out at the very end. And it definitely rewards rewatches for sure, as with any PTA film. But I think I might leave it at that. There Will Be Blood. Stone cold stunner. Stone cold masterpiece. I mean, has anybody called it overrated? Like, of course There Will Be Blood is a masterpiece. And Water is Wet, man. So yeah, that is my PTA ranked. I repeat, that is my PTA ranked. Number 9, Hard 8, 3 out of 5. Inherent Vice at number 8. I forget what I gave that. I think I gave it a 3.5. Okay, 3.5. Boogie Nights at number 7, 4.1. At number 6, Licorice Pizza, 4.4. I'll give it a 4.3. Magnolia at number 5, 4.5. Phantom Thread at number 4, 4.5. At number 3, Punch Drunk Love, 4.7. At number 2, The Master, 4.9. Number 1, There Will Be Blood, 5 out of 5. Baby. That's my PTA ranked. And film number 10, One Battle After Another. I'm seeing it tomorrow. And I will definitely be putting it on my PTA ranked list for now. But again, this is a PTA ranked list. Anything can happen. Anything can change regarding rewatches. How long you sit with the film for. So we're just going to see. But I will say that One Battle has been cracking most people's top 3 PTA. So there's that. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm stoked. I'm stoked to see it. And by the time you listen to me again during the next episode, I will give you my thoughts on it. I'll be giving you my thoughts on One Battle After Another, and I will be going through my early Oscar predictions for October 2025. And that's going to be in the next episode. And that will conclude this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully I still got it. Hopefully I'm still okay at this. So, eventually I would like to do strictly video podcasts from here on out. Once I get that whole thing set up, I still have some things to work out, some, you know, equipment to buy and everything like that. But I kind of want to do video podcasts and not strictly audio. Still going to be uploading the audio versions to, the usual platforms, but I kind of want to do video podcasts because I want to give you guys something to look at other than my stupid ass doodle. You know what I'm saying? So that's it, man. Oscar guy is back. Who knew he'd be back? I knew. Oh, well, I didn't know it at some point this year, but I knew. I don't know. Yeah, that's it, man. That's all I got to say. That's all I got for today. I went through my list, and I love each and every one of you. Follow me on Letterboxd. Follow me on X, even though I try to stay off of it. Follow me on Instagram. And follow me on YouTube. All Oscar Guy Here. My handle is Oscar Guy Here consistently throughout those platforms. So yeah, that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for watching. Until next time, Oscar Guy is out.